The strive to improve STEM education is even moving outside the schools. Colleges all across the country have begun hosting a surprising mix of food, drink, and science. With Good Reason producer Allison Quantz went to a bar to attend a monthly science talk hosted by the University of Virginia. Hi, Sarah.
Hey, Allison.
You actually went to a restaurant and bar with the name Woolly Mammoth. How was it?
Yeah, the Woolly Mammoth is a pretty unique place. And there are motorcycles hanging on the walls. There are beads hanging in between partitions of a room.
Was there much of a crowd?
I was shocked. I got there early to set up, and I had assumed that I would have plenty of time and plenty of space, but the room was already packed. There were probably, I counted at one point, 50 or 60 people there.
And what was the talk?
The scientist's name was Eric Herbst, and he's actually a professor at the University of Virginia in Charlottesville. Basically, there are these molecules on Earth that are life-giving molecules, and it isn't until recently that we discovered that those same molecules are actually found throughout the universe, which has some pretty serious implications. Let me play you just a little clip of his talk.
Now, if you want to look at a cloud on the night sky, it's not so easy. Many of these clouds are very cold, so they don't emit light at all, and so you can't see them. In fact, the only way you might try to see them is that they block the light out from stars. So if you see a region.
But honestly, the best part of this talk was the questions afterward. For the most part, the questions really seemed to be coming from a lay audience. There was one woman who you could tell was a little unsure whether her question was even worth asking.
You said that the clouds go through a pattern of like cloud and then star and then cloud again. I was wondering if there was any way of telling how many times they had gone through that pattern, and I guess if there was any importance in knowing how many times it had gone through that.
Some of the questions, too, seemed really unique for an audience that isn't in academia and isn't in science. There was one guy who stood up and was really, I thought, brave enough to ask kind of the question of why does any of this matter anyway?
How do you go from information to something meaningful? How could you go back from that empirical data and actually tell us something of interest about ourselves?
Afterward, I had a chance to go around and talk to some of the people who were there. And as I had expected, there were some scientists, but there were a lot of people in science fields outside of the university, which I hadn't expected so much. I talked to one guy who was a nuclear engineer for a company in town. I talked to a woman who was a high school physics teacher and chemistry teacher. I talked to one young woman who studied history. And you could tell that having this talk in a bar, in a restaurant, really made a big difference for her.
I really like the setting. I think it's really casual. I think maybe it makes people more comfortable asking questions, you know, even if, like, my question, I was like, I don't know if this is a dumb question or not, but I'm going to go for it.
For the record, after she asked her question, Eric answered and said, that's a really great question.
score one for history. What a great idea. The idea of getting this kind of academic seminar in such a fun, relaxed setting.
Yeah, I think really it just made it a good time. This guy loved it.
You know, I thought conceptually it was super awesome. It was fun to listen to. People hanging out, drinking, having a good time.
Makes me want to go.
They have one every month.
Wonderful. Thank you, Allison.
Thank you, Sarah.
Science Straight Up was the brainchild of Michelle Prisby, who is the University of Virginia's Director of Science Education and Public Outreach. She says she attended a conference and heard about groups all over the world who were hosting something called Science Cafes. Michelle, what is a science cafe?
Well, Science Cafe is a public science event that takes place in a cafe, a coffee shop, a bar, or a restaurant, and is an opportunity for discussion with a scientist. Really different than a public lecture. So a public lecture, somebody might sit in an auditorium and listen and watch a scientist give a PowerPoint presentation. A science cafe, the scientist gives a quick introduction, and then the rest of the time is spent with back and forth, question and answer, discussion.
When you were inspired at the conference you went to, what cafe stayed in your mind that was very cool that you saw?
Oh, that's a great question. And a few members of our team at UVA were also familiar with this one that takes place in Brooklyn called the Secret Science Club. And they have hundreds of people who come out to their event. It's a very hip thing to do.
How fun.
Yeah, absolutely. It looks really fun. And the woman who runs it was a very fun person.
When you have gone to these that you've put on, what is one of the most memorable ones you can recall?
Wow. I think actually I would say our first one, because we completely packed the place and people asked wonderful questions. So we finally had to cut it off so that people who wanted to get home could go home.
And do you think the people who were there were just bar patrons who spun their bar stools around and went, oh, science, oh, we'll bite?
Some of both. So we did a lot of publicity to try to draw people into the event. And there were some people who definitely had come specifically for that. And then there were other people who I think were just showing up at the Black Market Moto Saloon that night and decided to try it out.
And what was the subject that night?
Well, I should say that it took place on the day after Charles Darwin's birthday and the day before Valentine's Day. So we chose our guest scientist and our subject matter pretty carefully. And he was talking about sexual conflict and the evolution of sexual conflict, not with regards to human beings, although I think many people turned out thinking it might be about that. But most of his work is looking at other animals. But we found that people had lots of questions about how it could possibly apply to human evolution as well.
I noticed that some of the titles that I saw in the brochures that you all have as you promote these, zebrafish glial cells in action. Right. The borders that we have within our own nervous systems, thinking of the human body as sort of international borders and the conflicts going on there.
Yeah, we've had fascinating topics from chemistry, biology, medicine, environmental science. But I think the ideal topic is something that pertains to something people might encounter in their everyday lives. That said, we have had excellent turnout for talks on astrochemistry, which is the one we had most recently, and the Higgs boson, neither of which are things that are really going to affect people's daily lives.
You're also, of course, in a college town where you have a lot of people very interested in this sort of intellectual fair. Have you noticed that it's mostly the retired people who have time to do this and are intellectually curious? Are you also getting a range of individuals?
I'd say we are getting a range of individuals. There are quite a few retired folks, but we've seen young couples who come almost as if they're on a date. We have seen families. So I've seen parents bring their teenage youth with them who often ask questions as well. So that's fantastic. There are some clubs that have come. There's a club called the Skeptics Society, and they are interested in talking about science and regularly come out for our events. When we have surveyed our participants, about two-thirds of them are people who are not professional scientists or working as scientists, and about a third are working or studying in some sort of science field.
That's interesting. What sort of void do you think this fills? I mean, we do have a lot of public television Nova-like series accessible to us. We have many magazines and newspapers and online materials. Why this?
Yes, the void that this fills is that it's also social. So in the way that you might go to a cafe to chat with your friends about what's going on with their lives, this is a chance to go to a cafe and chat with your friends about a science topic. It's also face-to-face communication with a scientist. So it's not somebody who's just written a book that you're reading about or somebody who's on TV, but somebody that you're actually meeting and you can ask questions right then and get answers, propose ideas to the scientist, really have personal interaction.
Have you ever talked to one of the presenters who was stimulated by the audience discussion?
Oh, definitely. We've had some of our scientists continue to come back as participants, which I think was a sign to me that, oh, wow, the scientists are getting something out of this too. But one of the most memorable moments for me was a few months back. Afterwards, a student came up to me and said, you know, I feel so much more excited to go to work tomorrow. Coming to this and hearing this discussion with the public and participating in it reminded me of why I became a scientist and why I think science is interesting and exciting, and I feel so motivated to go to work tomorrow. These science cafes are really happening all over the world, and people can look up a science cafe near them. You can look up a map at sciencecafes.org, and that's a good place to see if there's one near you.
Have you seen them in Europe online?
Yes, absolutely. There are science cafes in many different countries, including some where you might not expect them, like Egypt and Pakistan.
What are they called there?
Café Scientifique.
Well, Michelle, this is wonderful. Thank you for doing this, and thank you for coming in today.
Well, thank you so much for the opportunity. It was wonderful.
Michelle Prisby is Director of Science Education and Public Outreach at the University of Virginia. Coming up next, uncovering the secrets of ancient squid.